Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
The hey there, I'm Toonami Generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your prime time host, Thomas from Tom Madison. I welcome you to episode 68 of The Prerogative. This week, well, it's my birthday this week. I'm turning 28 years young, and which I'm way too young to be even using that phrase, 28 years young. Anyways, because I'm such an old man, Tommy. But, you know, it's my birthday, and I wanted to cover something that, you know, is truly dear to my heart. Film, or television series for that matter, that maybe not a lot of people talk about, or I haven't heard people review a lot. I believe I've reviewed it a couple times on other forms of the prerogative, you know, in the past. You know, again, remember, we're celebrating 5 years, so in the times that I've done podcasts for Shaft, and both in video and 2-minute audio versions, I believe that I've recorded things, little reviews and such about this. In this case, it is a film that I'm going to be reviewing, but I want to cover something that is very dear to my heart, one of my favorites. And because of that, this week on The Prerogative, we are going to be reviewing the Studio Ghibli classic, produced by Hayao Miyazaki. Also, he wrote the screenplay, but was directed by his protege at the time, Yoshifumi Kondo. That being Whispers of the Heart. This being the only movie that Yoshifumi Kondo would unfortunately be able to direct, being that he would, about a year later, die in a car crash, which is very sad, and especially considering the fact that a lot of people at Studio Ghibli was looking at him as being the successor to Hayao Miyazaki, and take over productions at Studio Ghibli. But Whispers of the Heart is one of my favorite animated films of all time. I think it's a vastly underrated Studio Ghibli film. I try to take care of where to call it a Hayao Miyazaki film, because it's produced by him, he oversaw it, he wrote the screenplay, but again, it was directed by Yoshifumi Kondo, so I feel like I need to give the proper respect to Mr. Kondo, for the sense that he did direct it, and this is his film, not Miyazaki's film. He is just as much part of it as Miyazaki was. But like I said, it's one of my absolute favorites. Being a hopeless romantic, it's just got such a great romantic tale, and it's got one of those classic sort of Studio Ghibli Miyazaki lessons that, you know, to an extent, especially in today's world, is hits so much on the head. Even by today's standards, where this was done in 1995, It's been almost 20 years since the film came out. Officially been 18 years. And still, the lesson that's part of this film, as we'll get to in the review, is very prevalent and very true. Especially with the way today's economy is. Not that this film is about anything economical, but it's actually more about people's dreams and chasing after their dreams, as we'll get to. It's just a great moral, I think, in the story itself that only somebody like Miyazaki can really capture, along with his protege Kondo. And it's just one of my favorites, and so this week, that's why we're going to be reviewing it. Before I get into the synopsis, I'd like to once again, remind you that on September 29th, which is a Sunday night, at 8, I think last time I said 7, but I do have it scheduled at 8, so I will be taking I'll be building the green room for it around 7:30. But yeah, September 29th, which is Sunday night, of course I have my live call-in show for the birthday anniversary bash extravaganza, where, again, celebrating 20th birthday, celebrating 5 years of podcasting, and celebrating 20 years as an anime fan. So definitely all this stuff is happening. We're celebrating on September 29th. If you want to join in the fun, remember, the only way you can is by adding me to your Skype list. My name is Mattis Leonhart. MattisLeonhart. All one word. Add me to your Skype list. Just let me know Sunday night, probably like I said, around 7:30, that you want to be a part of the show. I'll add you to the green room, and at some point we will start to bring people in to the live call-in portion of the show. And, you know, we'll have fun. I welcome all questions about, all questions about anime, or any topic that I talk about on my podcast, whether it be, Terror Witch of the Black Rose, from my Hexcast podcast, comic books from my Comic Book Crazy podcast, or Godzilla from my Tokyo SOS podcast, and of course, I love to talk about anime, so definitely taking questions about anime. If any questions, anything you want to say about the show, about any of my shows, about how good I do, about how horrible I do, it's an open forum. We'll be doing that September 29th. Everything is best, brother. But with that being said, let's get right into our synopsis of Whispers of the Heart. Whispers of the Heart follows the story of Shizuku Tsukimishima, who is a 14-year-old student at Mukihara Junior High School, where she is best friends with her good friend Yuko Arata. Living in Tokyo with her parents, Asako and Sierra, as well as her sister Shiho, Shizuku is a bookworm and is keen on writing. During an ordinary evening, she looks through her checkout cards in the library books that she has, and she discovers that they've been all checked out by a Shinji Amisawa. Over the next few days, Shizuku encounters a young man who she finds often annoys her. While riding a train to visit her father at the library he works at, she encounters a cat riding the train. Shizuku follows it, wanting to go on an adventure by following it, and discovers an antique shop run by Shiro Nisha. In the shop is a cat statue that is named the Baron. Nisha reveals that the Baron is part of a pair of statues, the other being a Baroness, and that the Baron yearns to be with his long-lost love. Shizuku continues to visit the antique shop, and eventually runs into the young man who continues to annoy her, and finding out that he is, in fact, Shinji Amisawa. She discovers that he has a penchant for building his own violins, and requesting him to play some for her, but he agrees under Dee promises she'll sing along with him. He then plays and Shinjuku sings Take Me Home, Country Road, a song she's been translating for her high school, or excuse me, her middle school graduation, and it is accompanied by Shinji and eventually Nishi and his friends who come back home from drinking. From there, Shizuku and Shinji slowly start to fall in love. However, Shinji is learning to make violins to follow his dream as a master luthist. Or luthier, excuse me. A couple days after the two meet, Shinji finds out that his parents have relented and is allowing him to leave for Cremona, Italy, for a two-month study with a master violin maker. Firm in her resolve to, match his, Shinjuku decides to test her talents as well, as she decides to pursue her writing seriously during the next 2 months. And after asking Nishi if she can write about the Baron, she goes on a quest to write her own story to see if she is good enough to match the inspiration that Shinji has left her. This is Whispers of the Heart. Country roads, take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia, Mountain Mama, take me home, country roads.
West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountain, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia.
Welcome back, and let's get right back into it, as we always do. Let's start off with music. And to start off with music, gotta talk about the overall music that's used in the movie. A lot of it being based off of, melody-wise, of Take Me Home, Country Road by John Denver. And, of course, the whole Take Me Home, Country Road song playing a huge principle, especially with its sort of connecting themes of the main theme with Whispers of the Heart. That main theme being the whole idea of that kind of that we grow up too quick. And really that is the sort of main lesson as we'll be getting to, but I think it is somewhat important to talk about here. The whole idea that Shizuku and Shinji eventually learned of how important it is. While it's important to chase your dreams, it's just as equally as important to slow down, see what you have in front of you. High school isn't just learning things for your career. High school and middle school and, the events of life are lessons that teach you things for later on in life. And so that main overall theme, definitely prevalent in the song Take Me Home, Country Road, if you actually listen to it. Because, again, it's a song where the singer is telling a story about how they yearn for the simpler times of them being a child. I'm going to get more into that main theme later, because there's more to talk about with that theme. Because, again, like I said, it's a very prevalent theme that still connects well even today. But, again, building melody-wise a lot of the music, and there's some music that isn't melody-wise, as we'll talk about in a second, but a lot of sort of instrumentals that get played over and over again, a lot of those melodies being built around sort of the melodies of Take Me Home, Country Road. And I think it fits very well with the theme, the very sort of wishful thinking, remembrance feel that Take Me Home, Country, take me home. country roads to the place that I belong, West Virginia. Na 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 na, come take me home down country roads. You know, it has this sort of wishful and hopefulness within the song, that sort of wishing for those simpler times as a child. And again, I love the different ways it's used in this film, from the first start of the film to where we open to Olivia Newton-John's singing of Take Me Home Country Road. The different versions that are sung by Shinjuku, again played by Brittany Snow here in the English version, as we'll get to in a little bit, throughout the film. The very fun little Japanese version that's done at the very end of the film. All of it fits so well together. And then, of course, all the melodies that play so well off of each other. And then sort of complementary melodies and music here, you know, some ones that aren't played off the whole Take Me Home Country Road aspect of it. The use of violins and the overall score, as far as the music is concerned, I think it's done extremely well. I love the use of strings and the overall melodies where, you know, when you listen to the music, the strings are the dominant instrument. And a lot of the other instruments are complementary and everything. And it all sounds very well, as great pieces should. But again, having the strings being the leader in those melodies works very well. The only song that's just so different, and it's this very techno, and I mean techno isn't a word, but it's like this very sort of more modern, beep, very fun little song. And it's done in this sort of fun company that's so different from the rest of the music. It's only played in 2 points, and it's during the first act. It's, you know, again, when she runs into Shinji, and of course she doesn't know who when Shinjuku runs into Shinji, she doesn't know who he is yet, and she's going like, stupid jerk. It's a D-jerk reaction to music, which I absolutely love. And there's also a particular piece, again, it fits with the strings, that I love, that has sort of a 16-bit quality to it, that I absolutely love. It's a very short piece, but I noticed it immediately, and I absolutely love it. I thought it fit well with that little sort of scene, because again, that sort of 16-bit sort of, and it's a very gentle sound, the sort of the 16-bit sort of, I'm trying to think of the word, synthesizing is the word I was looking for, but sort of a 16-bit synthesizing, it's like off of a keyboard that's gently put into the music, that's like very gently in the background at a moment, that gives it sort of like we're in this sort of modern place. So overall, the music that's used in the film, I absolutely love. Now, with that being said, we do have another point to talk about with music, and that's the non-music moments. And what I mean by that is, you know, something we very rarely get to talk about, or at least the past year we haven't got to talk about a lot, especially with a lot of the stuff that I've been reviewing, taking on more of a Western-style approach to the music. And what I mean by that is, you know, Americans and Europeans like to use a lot of music to set the mood. Again, this is not a thing of one is better than the other, it's just a different approach. A lot of times based off how somebody was, you know, came up in the industry and what influenced them. But, you know, Westerners like to use a lot of music all the time in movies to set the mood. You know, Eastern filmmakers in, you know, China, the Koreas, Japan's, you know, love moments of silence, so where there is no music, and they use the ambient sounds of where they are to set the mood. And nobody is better than that than Hayao Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli. Again, I was watching The Secret World of Eriti, which is a movie I would love to review, and am going to review in the future at some point, do this as well. But, you know, here again, points to where, you know, she's just walking, and all you hear is the clip-clap of her shoes, you hear the cicadas, and this is in summertime, you're hearing the cars swishing by. The only sounds in the film are the sound, the natural sounds of what's going on in the film. There is no music. The natural sounds of life are providing the mood of what you're supposed to be feeling. And it's done wonderfully here. It's just gorgeous. I love seeing this style of approach to sort of music in the background, because it is its own form of music. The idea of, you know, the normal sounds of everyday life being a melody that plays in our background. It's just a wonderful idea, and allowing the mood to be set through a natural means rather than a than your mood being altered by sound, which again is natural in its way. It's a natural way of filmmaking. Both are right. There is no right or wrong here. It's two different approaches. But it's, I think, much harder for a lot of people to do this approach, because it really takes an understanding of how to have the sounds play off each other. And they do it wonderfully here. So I definitely love the soundtrack, and I love just the music in general in the movie. This is not a matter of, oh my god, the music is so awesome, I need to get the soundtrack, though I will love to get the soundtrack. But it's a matter of, in the movie itself, when it needs to work, it works perfectly. Both when it's music setting the mood, and both when it's ambience setting the mood. So, music is just absolutely incredible in this film. From there, we then move on to art. I love the art in this film. It is classic Studio Ghibli. The sort of soft color palette mixed with the sort of soft, bold, almost Disney-esque lines that Miyazaki is known for, while having the semblance of sort of the classic Japanese style of character designs in the film itself. And more importantly, not just classic Japanese, but classic Japanese Miyazaki. Like, there is any other Miyazaki, but classic Miyazaki character designs, for that matter. The art is classic Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli. It's just gorgeous. It is beautiful. Just the way, again, it's, forget photorealistic CGI. You want to talk about art that just puts you into a real world. You know, you feel like you're in Western Tokyo. You feel like you're part of some place. You feel like it's a place that you could go just around your corner and you're there. And that's the thing I love about Miyazaki, even when he does his fantasy stuff, he does this, but especially in this film, it proves this point that I've always felt about anime. I know me, Lucid Dream, Chris, and Gene over at Chaff Plus Podcast, good friend Edwin, we've all been of this opinion of anime. Some of our favorite anime moments are those animes where the art puts you in a place to where you feel you can just go right around the corner and you're there. It's a place that's just around the corner. I would love to also make the joke here of just around the river bend so I can go into song, but I'm not. I think I've tortured you enough with my singing already, in the short version I did it. But no, it is. It's just, the art is that gorgeous. It's so real. It's so natural. And it's wonderful. And again, it's classic Miyazaki. The art is just absolutely gorgeous. Just the vivid designs. And again, I think we'll be talking more about the backgrounds. But, you know, just the action sequences. Just great sequences of art, you know, where Suzuki's chasing the cat. And, you know, you have this scene to where, you know, she's following the cat and the different places it takes her. It's just gorgeous. The way that sequence is done is just wonderful. And, of course, I can't talk about the art. And I don't know if this is a place to talk about background, but to me, it's a great ending of the film. You know, when at the end of the film, you know, Suzuku and Shinji are on the hill and they're watching basically the sunrise over the mountains to coming over, not over the mountains, but over the sea and everything, and the sun rising. and washing over Tokyo. It's oh my god, it is art. It is art. It is modern day art. Forget that it's for a commercial aspect. It is art. You will not see anything more beautiful than that. I guarantee you on that, you will not see anything more beautiful. It is just a gorgeous piece of art that is sequenced together to form a moving picture. It's absolutely wonderful. And the entire movie is like that, with just scenes that just, the art in the scenes, just the movement, and you just so follow the movement of the scenes. And in all actuality, all you're doing is just following a lot of times a young girl just journeying from one point in the city to another. But they make it feel, just in the art, so fantastic, so interesting, like, oh, there's something neat, and there's something neat, and you feel like you're on your own little car ride going through a neighborhood you've never been in yet, and just seeing all the interesting things in the neighborhood. They invite you into this place with warmth through the art. And it's wonderful. And then you have the character designs. And I love the natural aspects of the character design. I love the very sort of nerdish feel to Shinzuku's character design. I used the term bookworm earlier. And nothing is more true. That very, almost bookwormish, yet without doing the stereotypical glasses. You know, that's the thing. You know, it would have been stereotypical, but they left the glasses out. So it's just, there's this natural feel to her, and you know, she's just a very intelligent girl in her character designs. Love the short hair; I think it works perfectly. Shinji he has this overall feel of sort of the average Japanese boy, and I love that feel to it. I love the character designs as far as the family is concerned. Again, you see where, you know, Shinzuku and her sister got her looks from. And it's just the whole feel of the character designs of these being people that, again, I can walk right around the corner on my way to the local convenience store and I feel like I could run into these people. That's the thing. Yeah, they're Japanese, mind you. But again, this is America, where we have Japanese all over the place, as we have Chinese and Syrians and African-American and all types of people. So it is something to where I feel like I can walk just around the corner and run into these people. I can run into this family. I could serve this family on another day at my place of work in the fast food business. That's what I, you know, that's what the characters are. It's natural, and they feel like real people. There's a fullness in the character designs that, again, is just classic Miyazaki. In this case, Kondo needs just so much credit for his directation as far as the art, as far as the moving pictures are concerned, because it's absolutely wonderful. Then you have the backgrounds, and again, the whole sunrise is part of those backgrounds, but the backgrounds are just gorgeous. And again, we're not just talking about the backgrounds here of, you know, again, this very modern metropolis that is Tokyo that's just so beautifully depicted, but also this atmosphere of, again, there are points to where, you know, Shinzuku's writing her story, and we go with her into the story and into the fantasy world of the Baron, and just, which is complete Miyazaki fantasy world, mind you, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. So the backgrounds are just so wonderfully put together. I cannot stop gushing about the backgrounds because they are absolutely gorgeous. I will never forget this. There are a lot of things I will never forget, obviously. Again, watching stuff and always trying to learn. When I first saw this film, I first saw this, in fact, I first saw the film in Japanese, I believe. I think I missed the English version of it. I first saw a lot of Miyazaki films when TMC did their whole month of Miyazaki, where John Lasseter had joined and was talking about each of the films. And they showed this film. And like I said, I believe I caught the Japanese. But again, I will remember him talking about the fact You know, the moment there are moments to where nothing's happening, the audience, you know, like, oh, it's a popcorn break, which I kind of laugh at now because at the time I thought this was going to happen in the middle of the movie. It turned out to be in the end of the movie, and yeah, kind of tricked me there, John. Anyways, but you know, he's talking about, you know, how Miyazaki, you know, his art is so gorgeous and beautiful that even in moments where nothing's going on, the audience is just still glued to their seat because it's just so gorgeous that they feel like they have to stick around to see what happens next. And with the backgrounds, it's no more evident. Again, they were also talking about this film, so obviously it's true. But it's really evident here that it's why Miyazaki and the Studio Ghibli team are just master craftsmen. And yet, this also goes into the special effects. The special effects are just wonderful. To the subtlety of rain and dust that is when they're in the real world, to the sort of fantastic colors and sparkles and gleams that happens when they're in the fantasy world. The special effects is done extremely well. Just, again, it provides another sort of moment of ambience, along with, just like the ambient music does, that brings you into this world, that makes you believe that this world is real. The backgrounds are the same way. The character designs are the same way. The art in total, like the ambient music, is just another layer of sort of reality that makes you think this world is real, that brings you into this world, that makes you believe that it's just around the corner. This apartment building, this library, this antique shop, it's just around the corner. And sometimes those are the best animes because they make you believe in this world that you're in. And that's the whole point, because once any piece of entertainment, whether it be an animated movie, a live-action movie, television series, a comic book, or a reading book, once they make you believe that this is real, that you can step outside your door and be a part of that world, they got you hooked. So, the great thing about both the music and the art, and we're going to talk about this with sort of the acting as well, is this overall main theme that I talked about earlier, and the overall story in general, are just perfectly supported by the music and by the animation. And as we'll get to in a little bit, by the acting as well. Why in a little bit? Well, it's that time to where it's time for us to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. I have to catch my breath because I've been just gushing about this movie, as you've been hearing for the past 20 minutes. And I'm going to play some commercials for you, as I like to now call them. But when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. So we'll be right back, folks.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
Hey, My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero. Only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Ready to form Voltron!
I am Batman!
This is a job for Superman!
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello. I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast, coming January 1st, 2013, to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it as we usually do. Of course, let's list off our cast list. As we go into acting, we have Brittany Snow as Shinzuku Tsukishima. David Gallagher voices Shinji Iwasawa. Gene Smart as Asako Tsukishima. James Skeen as Syria Tsukishima. We have Courtney Thorne Smith as Shisho Tsukishima. Harold Gold as Shiro Nishi, and the legendary Carl Lewis as Baron Humbert von Geeken. And the acting is just wonderful. And overseen by like John Lasseter and a lot of people that had a lot of love for Miyazaki film when Buena Vista Pictures, which again, subsidiary of Walt Disney Company, did the dub for this. And they did a great job, I think, of directing the voice actors. And the voice actors themselves, again, did a wonderful job here. It's kind of hard. Because, again, it's one of those instances where I can sit here and talk about how great they are. But at the same point in time, it's probably not the great place to bring up the whole taking jobs away from voice actors aspect. So I think we'll leave it at that. But I thought the voice actors did a wonderful job. Brittany Snow, and again, this is earlier on in her career when she did this, but Brittany Snow did just a great job of portraying sort of that very normal, natural sort of teenager. Which shouldn't be a surprise, her being a teenager herself. Of course, they had Ashley Tisdale play her friend Yuko. But yeah, just a very natural feel. Felt like a very natural person. Again, I keep saying it. Provided a voice that made you believe that you can meet this person just around the corner. David Gallagher just had a great sense of personality that I felt he gave Shinji. Very natural personality. Again, I think that's what makes this movie work for me, is that all the people you're going to feel, you know, they feel like a family. You've been introduced to this family. This is, you know, you can sense similar people in your own family. So, again, it's that the best thing I can say about all the voice acting here is that it feels so natural. It feels like these are real people. It doesn't feel like they're voice acting cartoon characters, as one might say. They're voice acting real people. They become these people. So I love the effort that's just put into the voice acting here. Gene Smart, I thought was funny at times as the mother. Again, the whole sort of scattered brain, sort of classic sort of Miyazaki mother. And I think Gene perfectly captured the tone of that as well. I thought James did a great job of portraying a sort of level-headed father. Harold Gold as Shiro Nishi, the older man who runs the antique shop. Just, again, being that inspiration and just, you hear the wonder in his voice, just sort of the joy in the voice that I absolutely love. And then you have Carl Lewis. I think this was a bit of fan service here, him playing, because he has such a distinctive voice. And as a matter of, like, we need somebody elegant, let's get Carl Lewis. But it works perfectly. Overall, I thought the voice work was wonderful. But again, Brittany Snow and David Gallagher really stole the show. And there's sort of a great chemistry there where you really believe in these characters falling in love. I mean, for the most part, I knew they would do good. It's just a matter of, again, especially when you're dubbing, it's a matter of really just not screwing up what the art is displaying on screen. Because I could watch this movie silently, just have subtitles, no audio. The art is so gorgeous that I can tell you exactly what goes on, even if I can't hear anything and didn't have subtitles. So again, it is that matter to where they just didn't have to screw it up, but they went beyond just not screwing it up. They did a wonderful job of making the characters a unique feel within the English language. So I love that aspect of it. With that, let's move on to story. And in talking about story, let's talk about our main theme. Which, again, it's that aspect of not growing up too quick. It's the idea, not just the idea, but the aspect of it's one thing, and it's wonderful for that matter, to want to chase our dreams. But sometimes we need to slow down and realize what we have in front of us. We need to slow down and realize how important it is not to let our childhood pass us by. You know, chasing our dreams is great, but it should never come to the expense of giving up our complete childhood and the realization of important and what can be wonderful life events through high school and college and everything like that, that we don't need to rush for our dreams. Our dreams will always be there as long as we don't give up on them. And that aspect of cherishing your childhood. And again, I say that being the main theme, due to the fact that, again, that's sort of the lesson that's learned here. You know, you have these two very headstrong people who fall in love in Suzuku and Shinji, and who want to follow their dreams. And again, you know, he is so desperate to want to be a violin maker that he's willing to travel to Italy, which inspires her to want to just write this tale just out of the blue, to the point to where they both give up on everything. They give up on studying. Allowing, you know, with Suzuku allowing her grades to fall. She's eating junk food. She's not spending time with her family. She's so headstrong on this project that the rest of the world becomes something that doesn't even exist to her. And she's letting it pass before her, not realizing what she has for her, not time. You know, there's that really good moment to where, you know, they've been arguing about her grades falling. And, you know, even though her father lets her continue what she's doing, that's when Shiho drops the bomb that, you know, she's moving out. And you can see it in Suzuku's eyes. And again, this is also leads to art, but it displays a story aspect there, too. Of she's starting to realize, my God, I'm so focused on this story, I'm letting important events pass me by. My sister's moving out. I'm not going to see her every day. You know, the also aspect of as the days go by for the 2 months, these two people who have fallen in love are just miss each other so much that the whispers of the heart, to use the title of the movie, is so strong that it's tearing them apart. That distance that hurts them in their craft more than it helps them. You know, as much as they are inspirations for each other, they need to be with each other for that inspiration to continue. And them coming to an understanding by the end of the movie. And again, the whole aspect of the main theme is slowly built into, but it really starts to become evident that being the theme by the middle of the movie, because that's where the real aspect of it is. This movie does a great job of getting you to know these people before. It doesn't hit you in the face right as the movie starts with, here's the theme! Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da! You know, you're gradually and gently, you know, sort of grandfathered into what the theme of this movie is going to be. And again, the whole inspiration and using sort of the romance of these two sort of lovers. They're too young to be lovers. But these two people who fall in love with each other, these two young people who are about to graduate middle school and go into high school. You know, they're still in middle school. It's like, I think, the last semester of their, like, final year of middle school that they're in. But again, their want to chase their dreams, but them coming to a very mature and very adult decision, which again, it's another, I'll be honest, it's a completely selfish reason I love this movie, because it displays mature thought process of young teenagers. That's complete fantasy as far as American concerned, because teenagers being mature? What world do you live in? Just like another aspect that makes this story a fantasy is the fact that you have a teenager reading a book. Gasp! What is this world coming to? Jokes aside, but you know, again, showing them and making a very mature choice that I love doing what I'm doing, but I'm choosing to finish my education because it will always be there for me, but I may have only a limited amount of time to be with you and to be with my friends and to be with my family. The aspect of to cherish, you know, the time when you have it, not to allow time to go by, not to grow up too quick, because your dreams will always be there. It's a wonderful theme, and I think Miyazaki displays it in such a wonderful sense. And again, as I said before, a real building block is the relationship between Suzuku and Shinji, and it's this great relationship. I think it's one of the greatest relationships in all anime, because it's this relationship that is slowly allowed to build. You know, she hates him at the beginning of the movie. At the time, she doesn't even know who he is. But as the movie goes along, there are little pieces here and there, and it grows into friendship and eventually into young love. And again, the movie ending on that whole marriage proposal to where, you know, like, do you see us being married? And she going, mm-hmm. And Kim going, I love you. Almost as if, like, yeah, if things keep going the way they are, you know, you would get married. It's that sort of great sense of, here's a sense of where the story may be going, and we'll let you can finish it in your own mind. But I thought it was a great ending point. I guess somebody had some question about why, because if there's one thing about the ending of the film, when he does that, they go right into the credits right after says, Shinsuku, I love you! You know, it almost seemed like an odd cutaway. I think it would have done better if maybe there was like a slow rise into the sky, or it was like a slow fade out as they looked at the sunset, or whatever, but I still think it works. It doesn't hurt. It's being very, 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 very nitpicky. But I just love this very natural relationship between these two young people who fall in love with each other. It's just so natural, and I love it. And there's just some great pieces there. And another thing, and again, one of the great things I said before is the fact that they build towards the theme. They build towards the relationship. The whole relationship and the whole main theme really only starts to become prevalent halfway through the movie. Oh, I would say around the 35, 40 minute mark. They really spend a good, I would say, first half hour of the film building you into and sort of introducing you to the lives of these people that you're going to be following. Or should I say, to the lives of Shinsuku and her life and, you know, what is going on in her life, the lives of her friends, you know, they're young, you know, her and her friends at school are young men and young girls on the grasp of in their teenage years on the grasp of young adulthood, and they're starting to, I'm not going to say those urges because they never implement that, but those ideas of I like a boy and I want to date a boy, those very young aspects about being a teenager, it's very natural. The aspects of starting to go into adulthood, yet the childish wonderment of dreaming still being there. The aspects of her family, a sort of very mature family, you know, father being a librarian, her mother being a graduate student who's finishing her master thesis, her sister who's in college, trying to find work, or turn her degree into work. Some very natural aspects that we all, as you know, normal people or anybody with some semblance of a normal life can connect to on any format. You know, the whole aspect of a natural family, it makes you cheer for these people. Because again, you're introduced in your life, they become family to you. They become your friends, and you want to cheer for Nezuko and Shinji to succeed at it. So it's a... That whole build-up of the first half of the film is done in a way to sort of introduce you and help you connect with these characters. And Kondo did it just so well. It was so well done. Last point I think we'll make about story is the pace. Because the pace is done extremely well. And again, this is really a two-act structure to an extent as far as the movie is concerned. Because you have that initial build-up. Or should I say three-act structure. Because you have the initial build-up. Then you have you know them starting to fall in love. And then you have this sort of race towards the end. And it's just done wonderfully. The pace of the film is wonderful. If anything, it's... The only thing that maybe hurts the pace is again, that sudden end after I love you, then we go to the credits. Like, wait, it's over? And it really is a thing to where, you know, you're watching this movie, and unless you've seen the movie, you don't think it's the end. You think the movie's going to be continuing on for a little bit more. But it's the sense of... it's just a sudden stop. But outside of that, pace is done extremely well, and again, everything here complements the story, as it should. At the end of the day, and this is just a simple love story with a great sort of main theme that provides a great life lesson to, I think, anybody who watches it. And the great thing about it is, it's a simple love story with a great main theme about the importance of slowing down and not growing up too quickly. Complemented by wonderful music, gorgeous art, terrific voice acting. This is why I think this is probably one of the top five best animated movies of all time. I know that's probably a shocker for a lot of people. I mean, I'll tell you this straight up. I don't even have Akira in my top 10. If I had to be honest about my top 10, they'd probably all be Miyazaki films in some form or another. But it's just... This, you know, again, the simplest of the story. At the end of the day, I sat down and I watched this movie from front to back, and then I was stuck in my seat. It was just so much fun to watch. I think it's truly one of Studio Ghibli's best films of all time. So at the end of the day, I give Whispers of the Heart 5 out of 5 stars. It's a perfect film for me. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. If you have any comments of anything that I have said about this film, any difference of opinion, anything, why I'm wrong, why I'm right, anything whatsoever, remember there are several ways you can contact the show. You can always contact the show by, you know, emailing us at our email address, which you can find by emailing to absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. And the A and the N is capitalized, I believe. Try it both ways. We'll see what works. You can also find us on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to Facebook and liking the Absolution Network. We're one with the A and the N in the circle. Or at least that's our logo. Like us, leave us a comment there. And you can always leave us a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And of course, while you're there, remember to check out all our other 132 Productions sites, which of course includes Gene and Chris and the Shaft Plus podcast. Of course, the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network. Of course, you can find the Shaft Plus podcast, by the way, at www.shaftplus.com. And, of course, my other podcast, which includes Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcast network, which features Comic Book Crazy and Hexcast, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, while you're at any of the sites, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site, which includes Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Spiker's Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks, along with many more on the sidebar of the site. So that is it for this episode of a comic. I got the wrong podcast. That's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, we go into the series that I was thinking about reviewing this week, but I've already started on it, and I'm going to review it next week. We're going to review a series which should have been the complimentary series to Gundam Wing on Toonami. And hopefully, in my research for it, I'll see why maybe it never appeared on Toonami. Though a couple episodes did appear on Fox Mornings. I firmly remember a couple episodes appearing alongside Power Rangers Lost Galaxy. This is a series I love. It has a wonderful movie that goes along with it, though we're reviewing the series. It's a great mecha series. Very underrated. And it's just gorgeous art, gorgeous music. I can't wait to review it. Next week, we review The Visions of Escaflowne. So until next time, my Toonami generation, stay gold!
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.